Wednesday, January 8th. Welcome into Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. Welcome to the folks listening.
Yes.
90.9, streaming on the WHYY app. Welcome to the folks watching on YouTube. Our studio tubers. Hello to our tubers.
I think that's
catching on.
It's catching on. I love our listeners.
And you could iterate on it. Like studio tubers, our home fries, our spud buds.
Our tater tots.
Our tater tots.
Shout out to the listener who emailed that that name as
our
well.
Our tater collaborators.
And by the way.
Look at that. Look at that. That's amazing.
We're showing a visual right now. Stanley Menendez, one of our pledge producers. Our pledge producer produced this wonderful visual showing two potatoes, one wearing headphones with the name Studio Tubers.
Great description, by the way,
love
for
it.
The folks listening. So
they're
hello
cute.
To the Studio Tubers. I do have to say one thing about our debut yesterday on YouTube, which is that I was made aware that someone in the YouTube comments, and you could leave comments in the YouTube, Cherry.
Okay.
I don't know if you knew that, but you can.
All right, wonderful.
And one person said that you looked great and very professional, and then they said, Avi looks dot, dot, dot.
Uh-oh.
Now, come on. This is a look for me.
And please explain the look for people who don't know what you have.
This is fully thought out.
So go ahead.
I wear T-shirts, but I'm trying to wear T-shirts that rep, like, that have some local pride tied into them.
Mm-hmm.
So the first day I wore a T-shirt from a diner in my neighborhood, Comfort and Floyd. Today I'm repping a T-shirt from Taco Heart, which is my favorite breakfast spot in South Philly.
There you go.
Amazing breakfast tacos. So shout out to them. I've mentioned them before in the show. So yeah, I look bad, but I'm helping local businesses, okay?
You don't look bad, but I don't know. And we don't know what that dot, dot, dot meant. I did not see
that
comment.
That's true. That's true. It might have been praise. Sometimes you leave out praise. You omit praise.
Yeah, and you're...
I want to praise you, by the way.
Oh, you do?
For bringing us an article that was published recently in the Wall Street Journal that got us thinking at Studio 2, so much that we decided to put this entire show together. So I'm going to read the beginning of the article.
Mm-hmm.
It says, Americans in their 30s have never looked less like grownups.
Ooh, that line right there.
Yeah, that's provocative, right?
Mm-hmm.
Amid steep declines in home ownership, marriage, and birth rates, economists have long been warning that young people are struggling to meet the milestones of adulthood. And that's what the show is about today.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk with the author of that article and then two more experts later in the hour. And here's our question for you. Do you think younger generations are postponing adulthood? Is it by choice or because of economic / social circumstances?
Yeah.
And if you are a young person, do you feel like you're falling behind prior generations? Give us a call, 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org, or to our studio tubers, you can leave a comment on the YouTube stream.
Yeah, and I really want to hear from some young men, if possible, because there are some gender differences in this discussion. I'd love to hear from them. And if you're in your 20s or 30s, we'd love to hear you call in and have a back and forth, 888-477-9499. So we have to do our trio of news stories now.
Start us off.
Yeah, the first big story. Pennsylvania Senator John Fetterman is the lone Democratic sponsor, on a Republican bill that would help authorities crack down on illegal immigration. Now, this bill is called the Laken-Riley Act. It would allow the feds to detain undocumented immigrants who are arrested for theft-related crimes. The bill passed the House yesterday with bipartisan support from 48 Democrats, including Congressman Brendan Boyle, who represents parts of Philadelphia. It's named after Laken Riley. You probably heard that name. A 22-year-old student who was murdered in Georgia by a man who entered the country illegally and had a previous arrest for stealing from a Walmart. So immigrant rights groups and many Democrats have called this a horrible tragedy that was being used for political gain. And as I mentioned, the Senate bill is led by the GOP, and John Fetterman is the only Democratic co-sponsor. He joined Senator Katie Britt on Fox News yesterday. Take a look at what he had to say.
We have hundreds and hundreds of thousands of migrants here illegally that have convicted of crimes. And why, I don't know why, you know, who wants to defend to allow them to remain in our nation through that? And now, if you're here illegally and you're committing crimes and those things, I don't know why anybody thinks that it's controversial that they all need to go.
And so there you go. I mean, Avi, this, you know, Fetterman has been an advocate for Dreamers. His wife, Giselle, was a Dreamer. But he also, in recent months, has called for more border security and stricter penalties for undocumented immigrants that commit crimes. Your thoughts?
A couple thoughts. So just to clarify something that Fetterman said, it would also, you could detain people accused of theft. He said convicted. That's an important distinction here. So Fetterman's evolution on this is interesting because of his backstory, right? His wife came to this country. Her mom was an undocumented immigrant. And he has definitely changed his rhetoric on this. But I'm almost as interested in what you said about Rep. Brendan Boyle of Philadelphia, because you could see Fetterman's evolution as purely political if you wanted to, because he's a swing state senator. Clearly, the dial is moving right on this issue.
It is.
Boyle is in a very safe Democratic seat in the city of Philadelphia. I think him voting for this is maybe more a sign of the times than anything Fetterman is doing.
Yeah.
Because that would suggest that Democrats writ large are really changing their stance on the issue of immigration and what should be done to people who are undocumented and living in this country. So that's the one that really raised my eyebrows even more than Fetterman, who's already clearly been moving this way.
Yeah, and by the way, there are a couple of other Democrats in the U.S. Senate who have indicated that they would support this bill.
Yeah.
And it could go up for a vote as soon as Friday of this week.
Staying in the arena of politics, nice roundup in the Inquirer, just looking at all the new laws that are going into effect this year. So, you know, legislative sessions are just getting going, but the stuff that they already passed and signed is starting to take effect. Yep. So I'm just going to give you a few of them. Like, this is an interesting one in New Jersey. The Louisa Carman Medical Debt Relief Act prohibits most medical debt from being reported to credit agencies and caps interest rates on medical debt at 3%. We talked about medical debt before. Interesting move in New Jersey. New Jersey's minimum wage risen to $15.49 per hour. That's not happening in Pennsylvania, notably. Also wanted to note here in Pennsylvania that government officials, including Governor Josh Shapiro, are getting a pay raise that is it's tagged to the rate of federal inflation. So it's going to be a 3.5% pay increase. You know, inflation has been pretty high recently. People always get, you know, a little offended when politicians start to make more money. And Shapiro will be one of the best compensated governors in the country.
Second,
right? He makes a little less than $250K a year. I'm a little heterodox on this. It doesn't really bother me. I think politicians in general are kind of underpaid. And the problem, it's like, well, why do I care if they make $250, $150, $350? The problem is that if the salaries are really, really suppressed to what a typical executive would make, then people of lesser means do not run for or cannot run for office. Yeah. I mean, Jimmy Carter, you know, he just passed away. He talked about how he was deeply in debt after getting out of the presidency. And that's a hurdle for a lot of people getting into politics.
Yeah. And I think about that. I mean, if you think about it, Governor Josh Shapiro is basically the CEO of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
And if you think about CEO compensation in the private sector, I mean, Pennsylvania is getting him super cheap.
Right.
So,
and no one's saying he has to make that much.
No, absolutely not. But I mean, comparative, if you think about it, and he has tens of thousands of employees working for the state. Yeah. So, you know.
Yeah, I it's an interesting one. I feel like it's such an easy headline, right?
Yeah.
To be like, politicians are making more, that politicians make this much, X, Y, and Z. But I do think there's a downside to the fact that politicians, you know, based on, you know, how tough the job is, whether you think they're doing a good job or not, make way less than people in the private sector.
By the way, some of the row offices make over $200K. So people may feel more differently about those types of offices versus the governor. By the way, minimum wage in Delaware is now $15. Got to mention that. That wasn't part of the roundup.
Thank you for shouting out Delaware. I'm
gotta
so sorry,
I got to mention our Delaware folks. Okay?
Delaware, you exist and we acknowledge you. I also acknowledge...
sorry. That was funny.
Anyway. I also acknowledge cookies. Let's talk about cookies.
Yes. This month, Girl Scouts will descend upon street corners and grocery stores across the country to hustle Americans into buying as many boxes of cookies as they can carry. And by the way, they hustle me because buy at least 6 boxes every season.
How is the show anti-Girl Scouts? What is going on?
And by the way, the big news here is that after this season, they'll be selling fewer cookie flavors. They're discontinuing 2 of them.
Which
the
ones?
The s'mores and the toast yays.
By the way,
the s'mores are described as crunchy graham sandwich cookies with chocolate and marshmallow filling. And the toast yays are toast-shaped cookies full of French toast flavor dipped in icing. So there you go.
But they still got Thin Mints.
They still have Thin Mints.
They still got Tagalongs.
Yeah. And they still have my favorite, which is the lemonade. And
what's
they're shaped, they're cookies, they're like these, butter cookies, and
they
have lemon icing on the back. And by the way, you freeze them, and I love them because you could take them out the freezer and eat them.
I never heard of these.
Cold. They're delicious.
All right. What are they called again?
Lemonades.
Lemonades. Yeah. All right. I'll get a box this year in addition to everything else. Mm-hmm. Shout out to the Girl Scouts. We were way too mean to the Girl Scouts in that
segment. By the way, there's a lot of local Philly stuff. Check out that article. But we have a lot to talk about.
Talking about
Arrested Development on the other side of this break. We'll be right back.
We could all use a little help navigating the news these days. The Consider This podcast wants to give you a hand. 6 days a week, we'll help you make sense of the day's biggest news story and what it means for you in less than 15 minutes. Listen now to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
Welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman-Arentz. We all know the cliche, young people today. Mm-hmm. Older generations often look down at the choices younger people make with a critical eye. But there are real generational differences. And today we're looking at what's happening with millennials and old Gen Zers, those 20, 30-somethings who seem to be postponing some of life's big milestones, such as marriage, having kids, homeownership, or even living on your own.
A recent article in the Wall Street Journal by economics reporter Rachel Wolf asked this question: what happens when a whole generation never grows up? And that caught our eye. So we've asked Rachel to join us to look at how big a shift this is and why. Rachel, welcome to Studio 2. And before we get started, our producer, Andreas Copes, went to Northern Liberties this morning and asked some folks about why younger generations are hitting milestones later in life. They spoke with Madison, Bella, and Eleanor. Let's take a listen.
I would say it's definitely because everything is like so expensive, where like we're both 27, 28 soon, and we're like, I don't know how our parents at this age, like, were buying houses.
And if women are going back to school and they're succeeding really well, the men also need to be keeping up with that.
Okay, one, what counts as a milestone? I think parents
exactly
had a very different idea. So maybe they hit their idea of milestones sooner, and younger people hit their idea of milestones at the same kind of age.
That captured so many of my thoughts. Mm-hmm. And we have a question for you listening out there. Do you think younger generations are postponing adulthood? Is it by choice or because of economic/social circumstances? And a special bulletin, if you are a young person, if you're in your 20s or 30s, do you feel like you're falling behind? Give us a call, 888-477-9499. Email studio2@whyy.org or leave a comment on the YouTube stream.
All right, Rachel, your article struck a nerve. Lots of chatter about it online. And at the very top of the article, you have a quote from a 38-year-old who is single and living with 3 roommates. He said, quote, "It feels like the instructions for how to live a good life don't apply anymore and nobody has updated them." Rachel, what changed, do you think?
I think a lot of things have changed in terms of both societal expectations and economic realities. So there's this component where some of these milestones really are more difficult to achieve than they were 10, 20 years ago. Buying a house is the clearest example of that. it is the most unaffordable housing market in at least 40 years. There's just no way around that. So, you know, no matter how much you want to buy a house, no matter how big the house you want is and how much you make, it's just more difficult than it once was. So there's that component. But I think a bigger part of the story is how our definition of what a good life is has changed, because I think there is a lot less social pressure to do things like get married and have kids. People have higher expectations for what partnership and parenthood looks like. You know, if you don't have to do it, then if you're going to do it, you want to do it right. You want a partner who really checks every box. So it raises the bar. And, you know, it takes either longer, or what I argue in the story is that more people just aren't doing these things at all. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's only a bad thing in that there doesn't seem to be a clear path for what happens if you don't do those things. So, you know, creating our own definitions is awesome, but I think that people, my generation, are having more trouble finding fulfillment. We feel more pessimistic than our predecessors.
When you raise this topic with people, the first response you often get back is, it's about the economy, stupid. It's about money. So here's, you know, Gregory from Philadelphia, who says all of those milestones have significant costs. If you're burdened by high expenses and stagnant wages, you're probably going to have to delay the achievement of those milestones. So let's dig into the data a little bit, Rachel Wolf, because you did in this story. I mean, is it about money? Is it about wealth? Is it about wages? I mean, what does the data tell us?
The data is complicated, and the data only tells us part of the story. What the data tells us can feel counterintuitive. And what it shows is that we are, on average, out-earning our parents.
That out-earning. So that's...
They're out-earning.
Yeah. No one's going to guess that.
Out-earning. Money.
We, on average, and average is just that, there is a significant share of people that are not doing better than their parents. You know, that is completely true. Young men in particular really struggling in the labor market. But when it comes to dollars and cents adjusted for inflation, so, you know, that takes into account housing, that takes into account groceries, that takes into account all of the things that do cost more, we are making more to compensate. So our wages adjusted for inflation on average are 16% higher than our parents were. However, you know, I looked up between 2000 and 2024. The other thing that's changed between 2000 and 2024 is that we have a lot less certainty that, you know, even if we have more higher wages and more wealth, we have less certainty that the economy is going to keep growing, that our houses are going, that those of us who are lucky to own houses are actually going to be worth anything. I live in New Orleans, and so climate change is a really big risk where my partner and I have talked about buying a house, and we're not sure if it makes sense to, because will that house still exist in 50 years? And right. So these are considerations that our parents didn't have to make. And I think that when people are talking about economic constraints, they're talking about the inflation of the past couple of years, but they're also talking about how AI is threatening the labor market, how we no longer have faith in big companies. It's more pernicious almost than just looking at how much our wages is actually up, because sure, they're up a little bit, but our expectations for what a good life look like are up even more, and our faith in the future is really depressed.
Yeah. I want to talk about the gender dynamics, because you touched upon that a little bit, and you've done an article on some of the changes that have happened. You have more women entering the workplace. The number of men entering the workplace has grown stagnant, more women getting education. How does this affect whether or not certain milestones are met when the gender dynamics have shifted over the past couple of generations?
Totally. I mean, I know that women on average feel a lot less faith in the institution of marriage and are decentering romantic relationships because they feel like they can't find a man who meets them where they're at in terms of education and income. And that makes it a lot harder to achieve any of these milestones. It's a lot harder to buy a house on one income. It's a lot harder to have kids. And so obviously you're not getting married. So I think that that is playing a huge role here And I actually have another story that's going to come out about that, about how the gender disconnect is playing out in the dating pool and affecting the ability of young people to meet these milestones on the whole. So it's a bit complicated, but I think that just the fact that men and women are having so much trouble finding things in common at this point, politically, economically, I think that that's really playing a role.
I would love to read this email now. This is a person wants to remain anonymous, but says, I'm a 34-year-old man and I'm just now getting married and had lived alone for 6 years. And before that with friends. Economically, it was really hard to live even with multiple roommates out of college, but I'm so thankful I've taken my time to find my perfect partner rather than rushing for the sake of it. And that's where we get into this idea of choice, the idea that you can wait. It's socially acceptable to wait, that you can find your perfect partner, your perfect job. You can find meaning in your work. All of these things are evolving. Yeah. Do you think that's having an impact on when people decide to sort of establish their lives?
Huge. And it's why some people are saying no to some of these things altogether. They're like, this doesn't serve me. And no longer do you have to be married in order to be considered a full adult person. And I think that's awesome. You know, it's great to have higher expectations. And I think that's definitely delaying. I think it's also one reason that more people aren't doing these things at all. Again, the only problem is if people feel like they're missing out, like if people feel like they can't do these things, if people really want a partner but think there are none that are out there. I think that that's where we get into trouble. It's less that people doing these things later or not at all is not a problem. It's if people want some of these things and feel like they can't have them, that's a problem.
Do you think younger generations just have more time? I mean, people are living longer.
That's probably part of it. I think, though, then we would, then I really believe that what economists have been calling a delay for years is really more of a permanent situation. Mm. So I don't think it's just a delay. I think that that's part of what's happening, but it's also true that just fewer people, full stop, are getting married, having kids, buying houses. Like, you know, it's a never not later for a lot of people.
A never not later.
Never not later. Interesting stuff from Rachel Wolf, whose reporting inspired this whole episode. Mm-hmm. So first, let me thank you, Rachel Wolf, economics reporter for the Wall Street Journal. Mm-hmm. You've got our brains spinning, and we're going to keep spinning after we let you go, but we are going to let you go now. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
And let me read this comment from Jay, who says, many of the kids see milestones in the form of adventure, travel, freedom, and chasing opportunity. Marriage and kids can wait. Divorce lawyers can tell the tales of many who didn't. Ooh. And that gets into this idea of choice and also the perception of like what a milestone is and what we're really striving towards. So we're going to get into all of that in our third segment today. We've got two great guests lined up to keep this conversation going. Yes. Give us a call, 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org. And I see some YouTube comments coming in. We'll get to some of those. You are listening to Studio 2 or watching Studio 2. We'll be right back.
We could all use a little help navigating the news these days. The Consider This podcast wants to give you a hand. 6 days a week, we'll help you make sense of the day's biggest news story and what it means for you in less than 15 minutes. Listen now to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
And welcome back into Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. We are talking about why young generations are lagging behind on heading a lot of life's milestones, like getting married, having children, owning a home. And joining us now are two guests. Ali Volpe is with us in studio. She's a senior reporter at Vox. How you doing? You're also part of that young generation here. We also have Jean Twenge, who's joining us via Zoom. She's a psychology professor at San Diego State University and is the author of Generations, the Real Differences Between Gen Z, Millennials, Gen X, Boomers, and Silence, and What They Mean for America's Future. Jean, welcome to Studio 2.
Thanks so much.
And our questions for our listeners slash viewers today: do you think younger generations are postponing adulthood? Is it by choice or because of economics slash social circumstances? And if you're a young person, do you feel like you're falling behind? Give us a call, 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org or leave a comment on the YouTube stream.
Yeah, we want to start things off, warm up the conversation with a caller. We have Renata from Glassboro, New Jersey, who lives at home. Renata, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Terry.
How you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm great.
So I was in that article. It was really interesting to chat with Rachel about it. For me, I think it's like, I never was super interested in kids. Actually, my parents have known this since I was like 18. They knew before I did. You know what I mean? That I wasn't interested in kids.
Mm-hmm.
Marriage has always been an iffy thing for me. I actually just broke off an engagement earlier this year. And he was also living with my parents. So, you know, it's just very different from where, you know, at this point, my parents had just had me. They had bought this house, you know, that I'm living in. So it is very different. Those things are not even on the radar for me. For me, it's just the biggest thing right now is the job market for me personally. It's just trying to find something in this post-COVID job market, because I'm very career driven. That I could work 60 hours a week and be happy.
So, Renata, do you feel like you're delaying some of these milestones intentionally? Was that your intention, or is it something that just happened?
I think as someone who is career driven, I think it's just kind of something that happened where I knew I wanted to get my career in line first before I did anything big. And so I think it was fairly intentional.
Interesting. And I heard you say, Renata, that you always thought it was kind of going in this direction, like from when you were much younger. First, we should say how old you are now. But when you say much younger, like you're saying, like when you were a kid, you weren't, you know, dreaming of some of these milestones the way a kid 50, 60 years ago might have been.
Yeah. None of it was really all that important to me when I think, I'm 31 now.
Yeah.
And when I was 18, I remember my mom saying, yeah, I'm never going to be a grandparent, but it's fine. You know, I'm good with it. I can tell, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. Thanks so much. That's Renata in Glassboro, New Jersey. So, Gene Twenge, you had a chance to hear some of, Renata's thoughts. Does it sound familiar to you? What do you take away from, you know, everything that she laid out, including the idea that this was part of the plan for her in some ways for a long time?
Yeah, so there's a number of trends here which are, you know, really pervasive in younger millennials and in Gen Z. So one is something that's called the slow life strategy, that because people live longer now, medical care is better, and we have a more technologically complex society, education takes longer, the entire life cycle has slowed down. People take longer to grow up and longer to grow old. And so where we see this the most is in young adulthood, that it's absolutely true. People are getting married later and having children later and settling into careers later. But that's only part of the story. It's also that children and adolescents are not as independent as they used to be, that middle-aged people look and feel younger than their parents and grandparents did at the same age. You know, it's the origin of 60 is the new 50 and 50 is the new 40. So there's a bigger story here that I think really puts things into context.
Yeah, and Gina, could you go into some of the differences between what was expected maybe for the silent and boomer and even Generation X versus the expectations now? Because we heard Renata talk about it. Her mom said at 18 she wasn't expecting to have any grandchildren. That's a lot less pressure than maybe previous generations had.
Yeah, so I think there's two things. So there's first just that people do these things later, that it used to be considered odd to be, say, 31 and not married and not have kids, and now that's just Tuesday. You know, it's just something that is more accepted that, you know, those things are going to happen later. It's also more accepted that they may not happen at all, and so that's another big trend. Some of it's rooted in individualism, which has grown over time in our culture, of more focus on the self and less on others, that you do your own thing, that there's not just one path for everybody. And also just a de-emphasis on, getting married and having children. I mean, we know that the birth rate is at all-time lows, and that is not going to change. According to the survey data that we have on, say, 17 and 18-year-olds, we have some of that that goes back to 1976 when it was boomers who were in that age group. And from boomers to Gen X to millennials, the same really high percentage said that they expected to have children. And then that started to change about 15 years ago, where both young women and young men in that age group are now less likely to say that they expect to have children in the future. So like, we can really see that these trends are not just with us now, but going to continue in the decades to come.
You said that word individualism, and that made me want to bring up this comment from our YouTube stream from Akram, who says, I think economic challenges play a factor, but I think it's more of a cultural change. I'm an Arab immigrant from the Middle East. Millennials there still follow traditional paths similar to those of their elders, for better or for worse. The West's emphasis on individualism as opposed to the East's emphasis on collectivism will necessarily lead to prioritizing and securing our individual success before worrying about starting a family and worrying about children. Pretty interesting perspective.
Yes.
But I also want to bring in this comment from Mackenzie, who's also on YouTube, and says, I'm 38 from Ewing, New Jersey, and resent being told I haven't reached adult milestones. The salaries, partners, and economy are no longer providing profitable avenues to make that happen. That resentment, Ali Volpe, does that sound familiar? The idea that, you know, society has created sort of arbitrary milestones for quote unquote making it in life. And younger people are like, wait, why are these the milestones? And why do I have to achieve them?
Yeah, absolutely. Those milestones are very sticky. Researchers I've talked to have spoken about how over generations, those sort of expectations of, you know, you go to college, you get a career job, you get married, you have a family, you buy a house. Those have persisted for generations.
Yeah.
And if you've seen your parents do that, their parents do that, you just sort of expect, you know, that's what I'm going to do. But I think what's happening right now is people are starting to question those ideals. Do I really want some of those things? Does that make sense for my life? And I think for some people who, you know, they do want the white picket fence, they want the marriage, they want the children, to not have that, it can feel very, very bitter.
Right.
And on the other hand, it's liberating for some people who maybe don't want those things, but see that there is a different path for them.
Right. And you mentioned there, like, this has been kind of the status quo for a few generations in a country like ours. But what Akram's pointing out is that that's not necessarily the global standard, nor was it the standard maybe 200, 300 years ago, certainly not going back into sort of pre-civilization societies where like living sort of in a group and a collective was probably pretty common. So there is a bit of maybe where there's some cultural bias baked in here. Is that the case, Ali Volpe?
Certainly. And I've heard that from, you know, folks who are children of immigrants, that what their parents expect from them is different than maybe what my parents expected
right.
of me. You know, my parents grew up in this country. So I do think there's a lot of different like cultural expectations at play. And yeah, when you're told your whole life that something is expected of you, you do sort of feel the pressure to do that. And I think it's only become more complicated with the advent of social media that we see other people around us.
A comparison effect.
Yeah.
Exactly,
yeah.
exactly. And when you can compare yourself not only to your high school classmates, but to influencers and people who are living lives that are just vastly different than yours, it becomes really easy to internalize some of those things of, oh, I'm not measuring up to that. And to Rachel's point of the markers of a good life, I think those have changed so dramatically because we see, you know, people living in these beautiful homes or going on these crazy vacations that are, you know, are often paid for by brands, but they think, okay, I should be having those things too.
Yeah, because your whole article is about what it really, what the idea of I've made it really means now. And I want to read a comment from Julie who says, I'm turning 28 tomorrow and I've had so many obstacles, both personal and societal, than my parents' generation that have made it impossible to even think about living on my own and starting a family. I want to bring in Cody from Collingswood, New Jersey, who's on the line. We wanted to hear from some guys here. Cody, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hi. There's a whole lot to unpack from what you guys have already
yes.
said, so I'll try to narrow it down. You know, ultimately, I think I kind of, you know, I'm 46. I have three teenage kids. you know, ultimately, I just kind of feel like it's a little bit problematic for, you know, my generation and the older generation to think that we have the right to define what the milestones of adulthood are for the next generation, especially when I, you know, I think we've done a pretty poor job as stewards with giving them the resources and, you know, leaving them, you know, a world that they can do these things with. Basically, you know, we've kind of said, like, you know, do more with less, you know.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think that's more or less my comment.
Thank you so much, Cody. And I want to bring you back into the conversation, Gene, because there's a lot of differences between even my mother's generation and my generation, as far as, you know, because people are aging and they're living longer, they're staying home, they're not retiring the way previous generations had. Younger generations, there's a ripple effect. Can you explain what that ripple effect is, just because our lifespan has changed? The way we live, how we live, what we do has changed. How has that ripple effect affected these younger generations?
Yeah, so it really just means it's become much more normative to take longer to do things. And some of that is for a really good reason, that more people go to college. It's actually the reason why there's some very good news in some of these generational trends. So millennials are a great example that more went to college, and that also meant, yeah, they got married later and bought their houses a little bit later and had their children a little bit later. But the, you know, very common perception that's also meant, oh, you know, they're doing these things later because they got hit by the Great Recession. Well, that delayed them a little bit, but it was more this very, very long-term trend. And because more went to college, median incomes among younger adults are actually at all-time highs, and that is adjusted for inflation. So I think that's the other part that we have to acknowledge in this conversation, that yes, there are certainly challenges out there in the world right now. Yes, we have climate change and problems to solve and so on, but that doesn't seem to be the reason for these delays. Mm. And it also doesn't seem to be the reason why more people are deciding not to get married and not to have children. So in polls where younger adults who don't have children, don't plan to have children, are asked why, the most common reason is, I don't want to, and I want my personal freedom. Climate change is way down the list. Economics makes the list, but it's below these more individualistic reasons about how they want to live their lives.
Mm. Yeah. And I want to bring you back into the conversation, Allie, because the perception doesn't always, the reality that we hear Gene talking about, people making more money, isn't what I typically hear from younger people. They all tell me, you know, we have Maurice from Philadelphia who says houses are $300K now. And they've complained about, they don't feel like they're making more money. Why does the perception, even from some of the folks who are higher earners, doesn't feel like they're making as much money as, you know, their checking account may say they have?
Totally. I think a lot of people are running on vibes right now. You know, you could be a high earner, yeah, but things are just simply more expensive.
Yeah.
Homes are more expensive. Food is more expensive. And to, you know, achieve maybe the things that they are craving, you know, maybe some of the things they've seen on social media, they want a certain kind of lifestyle. And that just comes with a price tag.
Yeah.
I know, for instance, you know, maybe if you really value living in an apartment with a lot of amenities, that's going to cost you. What is the sacrifice you're willing to make for that? And I think it's a good thing that people are thinking about maybe making these kinds of trade-offs, like if that is the life you want. However, I know there are some people who having children is really valuable to them.
Yeah.
And so they have to make the trade-offs. I think it's all about, you know, the markers of a good life and what that looks like to you. And I think it is a very cool thing that people are, you know, trying to live it within their values.
Yeah. They get to define what a good life is, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. I want to bring in another caller. This is Nick from Lindenwald, New Jersey. Nick, you're on Studio 2. Break it down for us. What's your question or comment?
Hey, Nick. Long-term listener here. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks
for
calling.
I just wanted to comment. For sure. I just wanted to comment, you know, I was listening to the program, and I'm a data analyst by profession. So I was thinking of some correlations here versus causations. So for me, the society right now seems to be structured along like a wife and husband type situation, where now for the good, there's a more equal pay among men and women in the workplace starting back in like the 1980s, I believe. So you have this dating pool for a generation, for men in my generation, where they're being less educated by their choice or societies. And then you have women who are being more educated, being higher earners. Whereas in the past, let's say, women might have been more inclined to marry early out of necessity to support themselves. Hmm. So you have this misalignment in the dating pool, which then, as other commenters have mentioned, like the cost of a house, the cost of having children on a one income salary is not as feasable. So I'm just kind of curious if there's been any research like into that aspect.
Changing
of
gender dynamics is what you're talking about. That was Nick from Lindenwald, New Jersey.
Thank you, Nick.
So let me put that to Gene Twenge, because look, we could talk about median income and household income, but who in the household is making that income, the relative education of the people in that household is going to change the dynamics, and it's going to change how people approach the future. I'm not exactly sure how, but maybe you can help break it down for us.
Yeah, so Nick is correct. I mean, and that's one of the things when you do dig into those statistics, that's what you see, is that almost all of that increase in younger adults' median incomes comes from women's incomes. And so that's obviously a very, very good thing. But then you have a heterosexual couple, and it's, let's say they're making equally the same, then you want to have children. And if you're going to have one person quit their job and stay home, then that makes things a little bit harder, especially because housing prices are often tied to these dual incomes.
You just lost half your household income. Yeah.
Yeah. And so you have the other, if you're both working, then you have to pay for childcare. And so this is somewhat taken into account in the, you know, adjustment for inflation, but not entirely. So that's one of the biggest challenges now, is we have what's really a collective problem around childcare that individuals have to solve. Yeah. And often those solutions are very expensive. So that's one of the biggest challenges, I think, right now that we have in terms of, well, if we have this low birth rate, how are we going to solve it? Well, childcare is really expensive, often hard to find, and that makes things really difficult.
Every young parent in America giving you a standing ovation on that one.
Yes.
Jane, thank you.
By the way, one of the things that we've been thinking about is sort of the implications of this. And that's the question Alicia asked.
Yeah, great question.
She says, I'm seeing people who are hyper-educated, hyper-informed, who are not having kids. Is there any data showing this and the implications for future generations? So what happens if these millennials, if these Gen Zers and future generations just decide that they don't want to take on these milestones of past generations, Gene?
Well, have you seen the movie Idiocracy? That's what it reminds me of. Mm. Of when you have, you know, the best in society saying, I'm not going to have kids. And then it's the people who forgot to go to the drugstore, low self-control or whatever. And then they're the only ones having children. You know, some people have speculated on that. You know, what's that going to happen? But just overall, I think we have to grapple really seriously with this decline in the birth rate, that it's below replacement. What is that going to mean going forward for things like Social Security as just one example? You know, there's some really big downsides to the birth rate being as low as it is now. You know, you could argue about demographic collapse, and that's already happening in societies such as Japan. They're a few, you know, decades ahead of us when it comes to this. So, you know, these are things we really have to think about.
Yeah.
Let me mention this comment from Sam, because we talked earlier about some frustration, some resentment from young people, and I can see that bubbling up in the comments. Sam says, I'm a 28-year-old man with a film studies degree. I've spent my adult life working in food service and customer service roles that, when adjusted for inflation, pay below the minimum wage from when my parents were in their 20s. It goes without saying, this is not by choice, and I am frustrated by the notion that my generation somehow isn't trying hard enough. But then Sam says, I am disinterested in some of the milestones that we've deemed important signifiers of success in adulthood. So you get both of it there, Allie Volpe. So there's this resentment of being told, like, you guys aren't making it because you don't want to make it. You're not trying hard enough. You're not hustling. Your expectations are too high. But then Sam also saying, like, but yeah, some of that stuff doesn't really, like, excite me. Does that sound like something you hear from researchers and from talking to people?
Yeah, I spoke to a researcher who studies emerging adulthood, so late teens into early 20s. And something he found from talking to a lot of young adults was that, you know, these sort of milestones of, you know, college, get a job, marriage, like that stuff is all still interesting to them. But first, they kind of want to establish themselves as like a unique individual, as an independent person, as someone who gets a lot of value out of their career. And then they can sort of think about those other things. So yeah. When I hear that comment, I think of this person who is really struggling to find that career job, which younger people have said is more important to them, according to this researcher. So maybe there's not a lot of, you know, space in their mind. They can't imagine a future where they're thinking about a down payment or sending a child to college because they're working these service jobs that they feel aren't paying them enough. So I think there's two things at play. Like when your reality just like does not make some of those things feasible, you know, it just becomes less appealing to you.
Yeah, I want to bring in another caller. We have Aiden from Yardley, Pennsylvania. Aiden, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hello. I actually have a pretty short comment, but I do think it ties into a recent thing that you just said. I am a game developer, or I am at least in the field. I've just graduated to college for it. But that was a job that it took me a while to know that I wanted because, well, video games are only 30 years old and the public space is a medium. And God knows how you actually go to school to make a video game. That's what I thought when I was like 12. Now I'm in the industry, and it feels like it's a walled garden where I understand why I couldn't learn about this because everything's arbitrarily secret. So right now my goals as a very young person are focused on my industry, and you guys were mentioning like the population decline. That's like the back of my mind. Even as one person, I don't want to have a kid because I want that number to go up. I'd want to have a kid because I want to be a father one day. I don't think we should focus on a number that we as individuals can't change that much.
Yeah, thank you so much, Aiden. I mean, that's a very interesting perspective. And this goes, my question to you, Ali, is what would be an incentive? Should lawmakers, should policymakers be thinking about how to get a carrot out there to get younger generations to hit on some of those milestones so that the crash and burn of Social Security that Gene alluded to won't happen?
Yeah, I think some of my colleagues have done some reporting on this in terms of like some of those incentives aren't exactly that appealing for people and doesn't really move the needle all that much.
So they're not convinced.
I think it really comes down to values. At least in my reporting, that's what sort of has bared out for people. Like people's values have changed. And that's not a bad thing for you, right?
I mean, you've talked a little bit about
your
personal approach to all this. You're a young person. You're in the demographic we're talking about today. I mean, how do you see this? How do you approach all of this?
Yeah, it was something I, again, never quite thought about because I just thought, you know, I will do the same things that my parents did. And I was very lucky to be able to go to college and to get a job. But like many millennials who, you know, maybe came of age in the post-recession, you know, finding a full-time job was very difficult. I'm a journalist. I was laid off a handful of times. So, you know, finding your place in your career is very hard. I was lucky enough to be able to save up to buy a house, but, you know, Philadelphia has a lower cost of living than a lot of other places in the country. So I feel like a lot of the quote unquote milestones that I have hit have been a matter of luck and maybe falling into it because I thought that's what I was supposed to do. But the more that I thought about certain things like parenthood, I realized that wasn't for me and that I did not want to have kids.
Mm. By the way, I want to read this comment. Julie says, I definitely do feel disappointed when I see people my age achieving these milestones when they seem so far away from me. That's the thing both of you were talking about. You don't want people to feel that way. We should bring in one more caller. We have Anita from Berwyn, Pennsylvania, a mother of three. Anita, you're on Studio 2. Brief comment or question. Please.
Yeah, thank you. I'm actually a mother of 25-year-old twins, 26, 33, and 40, and my children have all attended college, are in medical school, have good careers, but are not interested in having children because we're African-American, and the way that the world is, this country is, with respect to decreasing rights and the anger, they don't want children that they bring into this world. Now, two have said they'd be willing to adopt kids who are already here, but that's my comment.
Yeah. Well, and thank you, Uno Anita. Clay on YouTube has a similar comment who says, it's absurd to think that societal collapse is a bigger worry than environmentalism. We need less people on this planet, full stop. Anytime this issue comes up, I laugh to think how ignorant we are. So, look, there's a lot of perspectives on this. But, Gene, let me put that to you, because sometimes when people hear about the problems, the sort of cascade of problems that is created by a shrinking population, they think that's a good thing. I mean, is it possibly a good thing?
Little outside my wheelhouse. Maybe, maybe not. I mean, it's certainly not completely accepted that we need to cut back on, you know, that the declining birth rate is definitely good for the environment. I don't think that's an accepted opinion. I think the other thing that is really good to keep in mind here, because I hear this a lot, of living right now is terrible. This is a terrible time to live, that we have so many problems. It's awful. Objectively speaking, when you take a step back, really not true. Right. Is right now really worse than 2020 at the beginning of the COVID pandemic? Is right now really worse than the middle of the Great Recession? Is it really worse than 1993 at the height of the violent crime wave in the US? Is it really worse than boomers getting drafted into Vietnam? Every single era has its challenges. I think what's different now is there's so much more pessimism. Mm. Yeah. People have children when they're
interpretation of those challenges, the perception.
Yes, okay. Exactly. How we're interpreting it. And, you know, social media may have something to do with that. The rise in depression among Gen Z may have something to do with that. That's something I dig into really deeply in the book and Generations. There's all of these things that are just leading to this much more pessimistic point of view. And I think that's really key.
Yeah. Well, not ending on an optimistic note, but an interesting one. That's Gene Twenge, psychology professor at San Diego State, author of Generations, The Real Differences Between Gen Z, Millennials, Gen X, Boomers, and Silence, and What They Mean for America's Future. Thank you so much for your time. And thank you, Ali Volpe, senior reporter at Vox. Really appreciate your perspective as well.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yes, and thank you to all our viewers on YouTube, all of our callers who called in and folks who emailed in. And thanks to our producers, Debbie Builder, Paige Murray Bessler, and Andreas Copes. Mike Schiffler is our visual producer. Al Banks and Tina Calicay engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCory. From Studio 2 at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfmaner, and someone says on YouTube that I look relatable.
You do.